Hi, Dave Emery here. This is Fulton Record program number 1174, Harvest Time, part one. This is being recorded on March 4th of the year 2021. The title of this program, and we're going to do a number of Harvest Time programs at intermittent times as we proceed, basically references the fact that over decades, seeds have been sown in the American, in the turf of the American political fields. And over time, those seeds have sprouted and the crop has grown. It has ripened and now it is harvest time. So we are going to be examining how a great many things from the Capitol riot, as it has come to be called, of January 6th of this year, to the coronavirus pandemic and a number of other things, really represent the harvesting of things that have grown for many decades and grown from seeds that should never have been sown in the first place. If those seeds had been sown, then someone should have seen to it that they were not able to grow to fruition. But sadly, they have grown to fruition, and we are going to, I guess one could say, extending the metaphor, eat it raw. So that is the reference. There are many other things that we will be talking about. There are many things vis-a-vis the coronavirus pandemic. I want to talk about the wealth concentrating virus. That will be in addition to our BioPsyop Apocalypse series. I want to talk about the neo-imperialist and white supremacist virus. Those also will be additions to our series. I'm going to update the pandemic itself. We're going to be talking about many things. However, in this program, we are going to talk about the Capitol riot, among other things, and some things that I think should be borne in mind with regard to that Capitol riot. I want to emphasize most emphatically that listeners to the program should subscribe to the comments that are being made or contributed by Parafractal, our contributing editor. That's capital PTERRAFRACTYL, and other diligent and intelligent listeners. There is far too much just with regard to the Capitol riot to keep, for me to download, so to speak, in programs. There is so much going on. So please subscribe to the comments that are posted to the website to keep up on various developments vis-a-vis the investigation of the Capitol riots or Capitol riot. I am extremely pessimistic and I don't think things are going to work out well at all. I also emphatically encourage listeners to this program to get a hold of the 32 gigabyte flash drive containing all of my work through For the Record program 1156, and of course you can update the flash drive as new posts and programs come into existence. I thought, by way of entering into discussion of, among other things, the Capitol riot, we will talk about someone who has been, or long been, a favorite of people who want to dismiss obviously important, though troublesome, political developments like this country's assassinations, the assassination of JFK in particular, as, quote, conspiracy theory, unquote, and dismissing those, however diligent and however copious their research is, as paranoids or whatever. Particularly in the wake of the rejection of the 2020 electoral results, not only by Donald Trump, but by most of the GOP, and then in connection with the Capitol riot, we've been treated to a great deal of self-righteous posturing and commentary by op-ed writers, including people editorializing in the so-called progressive sector, about the paranoid style in American politics. That was penned by an American academic named Richard Hofstadter, Hofstadter. And there is no shortage of use of Hofstadter to dismiss the obvious and to buttress the conventional in the op-ed pages and on-air commentary. The New York Times has been doing the boogie behind Hofstadter's work. And again, the paranoid style in American politics in particular. What is worth taking note of, and this will be our entry point into the program this evening or today, and that is the fact that Hofstadter's work was promoted by and distributed by the Central Intelligence Agency to a considerable extent. In fact, his famous essay, The Paranoid Style in American Politics, was developed from a lecture that was given at Oxford University in November of 1963. In fact, I have heard it alleged by credible sources that the lecture was actually given on November 21st of 1963, which is one hell of a coincidence. In the book Into the Nightmare, My Search for the Killers of John F. Kennedy and Officer J.B. Pippit by Joseph McBride, published in softcover by the High Power Press and copyright 2013, there is discussion of the lecture that basically minted Hofstadter's essay, The Paranoid Style in American Politics, and also goes into discussion of the CIA's role in publishing and distributing Hofstadter's work. McBride writes, "But in a strange coincidence, Hofstadter first delivered a version of the title essay in a talk as the Herbert Sender Lecture at Oxford University in November of 1963. That is a strange coincidence. Skipping down. It may be coincidental, but Hofstadter's biography, David S. Brown, notes instances in the 50s and 60s when some of the historian's work was funded, albeit indirectly, by the CIA. Copies of his influential 1954 essay, The Pseudo-Conservative Revolt, unquote, on the dangers of right-wing extremism and its, quote, widespread latent hostility toward American institutions, unquote, and his book, The Development of Academic Freedom in the United States, with Walter P. Metzger, of 1955, were distributed by a CIA front organization, the Fund for the Republic. Hofstadter worked for the American Committee for Cultural Freedom, quote, a society of liberal co-warriors opposed to international communism, unquote, whose parent organization, the Congress for Cultural Freedom, was heavily funded by the CIA. In the 60s, Hofstadter also wrote for Bibulus and Encounter, two publications partially backed by the CIA. And that is, I think, probably far more than simple coincidence, whether Hofstadter himself actually was consciously working for CIA or whether he simply took it as good fortune that his work was getting that kind of distribution. The fact that Hofstadter, as an intellectual institution, and he has become that to an extent, is used to buttress the unconventional, the conventional and false, and to discredit, disturbing though, true slash verifiable events like the assassination of JFK, I think that is worth noting because again, American intellectuals have been doing the boogie vis-a-vis Richard Hofstadter, particularly in the wake of the Capitol riot. It's also worth noting another thing that Joseph McBride gets into in the book Into the Nightmare, My Search for the Killers of John F. Kennedy and Officer J.B. Pippit, and that is an aspect of President Dwight Eisenhower's famous 1961 farewell speech where he warned about the dangers of the military-industrial complex. And Eisenhower noted the intellectual dampening effect of government contracts. And I think as we take a look at the very disturbing evidence that the bat-borne coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2, was deliberately created, and that this pandemic is not a natural occurrence, despite the pronunciations to the contrary. And I would note that my prediction in the For the Record program number 1170, the Oswald Institute of Virology, yes, indeed, Peter Daszak and his EcoHealth Alliance has indeed come out saying that the virus was a naturally evolving organism, despite evidence to the contrary. As we gather up the unsavory harvest from the seeds sown really before World War II, but during and particularly near the end of World War II, and in its immediate aftermath, the willingness of many people who should speak up and who may very well know otherwise to remain silent because basically they have government contracts and they don't want to startle the goose that is laying the golden egg. That should be kept in mind. Again, in the book Into the Nightmare by Joseph McBride, he notes the following, and this is a very important, though again largely overlooked aspect of President Eisenhower's famous speech warning about the dangers of the military-industrial complex. One of the many prescient observations in President Eisenhower's 1961 farewell speech warning about the dangers of the military-industrial complex, unquote, was that, quote, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be the garbage. Well said, boy, Ike. President Eisenhower was known, but it makes me feel old. Ike was a common nickname for President Eisenhower, but again, that is fading into oblivion with time. Before we talk about the Capitol riot per se, and I'm going to do a before and after bookend of two articles before the riot and after the riot, and that I think will tell us much of what we need to know. Again, details being filled in by, among others, the vigilant Tara Fractal, our contributing editor, and others in the comments, to which people should definitely subscribe. I think one of the things that certainly Brigada Hofstadter will be dismissing, and one of the things that exemplifies the kind of growing seed and the kind of crops that we are now harvesting is embodied in another confrontation between civilians and U.S. government agents. This one, however, is very different than the Capitol riot. This is a confrontation that took place in Parkland Hospital on November 22, 1963. That hospital is in Dallas, Texas, and a group of Secret Service agents and other officials basically took Kennedy's body from the physicians and medical personnel at Parkland Hospital using the threat of force. And the physicians were going to do an autopsy on Kennedy's body. Instead, there was an obviously skewed autopsy that was done at Bethesda Naval Hospital, and Colonel Pierre Fink, one of the physicians, an Army physician who was performing the autopsy, stated under oath in Jim Garrison's courtroom, the New Orleans DA, that he was ordered by an unnamed superior officer not to dissect the neck wound in President Kennedy's body. That is testimony under oath of a conspiracy. But again, the Brigada Hofstadter will not recognize that. And I think, in a way, before we get into the Capitol riot per se, looking at this earlier confrontation between U.S. government agents and civilians, a very different kind of confrontation, is worth contemplating. This also comes from the excellent book Into the Nightmare, My Search for the Killers of John F. Kennedy and Officer J.B. Tippit by Joseph McBride. McBride writes, "What I found most revealing at the time in The Death of a President by William Manchester is its account of the Secret Service and Kennedy aides led by the late president's appointments secretary Kenneth O'Donnell stealing the president's body from Parkland Hospital." Parenthetically, McBride makes an excellent case that O'Donnell might very well have been invited in connection with the Bobby Baker case had Kennedy not been killed. And it was O'Donnell who arranged many of the details for President Kennedy's very lethal and treacherous motorcade route through Dallas, Texas. One more time. "What I found most revealing at the time in The Death of a President is its account of the Secret Service and Kennedy aides led by the late president's appointments secretary Kenneth O'Donnell stealing the president's body from Parkland Hospital. Discovering that startling report of a previously unknown event, including a violent confrontation between the White House faction and the Dallas County Medical Examiner, Dr. Earl F. Rose, RLSE, was one of the watershed moments in my understanding of the case. If Dr. Rose had not been blocked from performing the autopsy, the history of the case might have been radically different. The thoroughness and integrity of the autopsies Dr. Rose performed at Parkland Hospital on both Tippett and Oswald have never been questioned, unlike that of the shoddy, incomplete, and dishonest autopsy of Kennedy's body by military doctors at Bethesda Naval Hospital in Maryland, a key element in the cover-up. When I read that remarkable and bizarrely approving account of criminal behavior at Parkland Hospital by federal agents and members of the late president's own staff, a brutal act of aggression against a public official trying to do his legal duty, I could no longer fail to recognize by the spring of 1967 that, quote, something was rotten in the state of Denmark, unquote. The threat of violence in Manchester's account was left largely implicit. A more explicit account was later provided by Dr. Charles A. Crenshaw, one of Kennedy's attending physicians at Parkland, who witnessed the confrontation. In his 1992 book, JFK, Conspiracy of Silence, Crenshaw recalled, quote, a man in a suit leading the federal group, holding a submachine gun, left little doubt in my mind who was in charge. That he wasn't smiling best describes the look on his face. Kellerman took an erect stance and brought his firearm into a ready position. The other men in suits followed course by draping their coattails behind the butts of their holstered pistols, unquote. When Dr. Rose insisted on holding the body in Dallas for autopsy, exclaiming, quote, you can't lose the chain of evidence, unquote, one of the men in the suits screamed, quote, God damn it, get your A-blank-blank out of the way before you get hurt, unquote. And another one snapped, we're taking the body now, unquote. Strange, I thought, this president is getting more protection dead than he did when he was alive, writes Dr. Crenshaw. Had Dr. Rose not stepped aside, I'm sure they would have shot him. They would have killed me and anyone else who got in their way, unquote. The intervening years, quote, neither erased the fear that I felt nor diminished the impression that the incident made on me, unquote. Why were the conspirators so adamant about taking the body out of Dallas that they were willing to resort to murder to do so? If it came to that, Lipton's best evidence, which caused one of the great paradigm shifts in my understanding of the case, assembles a wealth of factual evidence to prove that Kennedy's body was surreptitiously altered. The purpose of the alteration was to obscure the original wounds and make it appear that Kennedy was shot only from behind and not from the front. And although that is a very different type of confrontation between U.S. civilians and U.S. government agents, I think that that confrontation embodies the sprouting and growth of the seeds that we are now harvesting, because it is indeed in many, many unfortunate ways harvest time. I'm going to look at two articles now about the Capitol riot, one of them a before, unquote, article, and the other one, an after, unquote, article. The before article, quote, a lot of potential danger, unquote. Trump is packing top Pentagon positions with loyalists, and people are worried because they don't know why. This by Ryan, R-Y-A-N, Pickrell, P-I-C-K-R-E-L-L, from Business Insider. It was carried by Yahoo News on November 11th, of 2020. and some key aspects of the Urbico. The Pentagon saw a string of high-level departures this week after President Trump said he, quote, terminated, unquote, the defense secretary, and the administration filled a number of those voids with Trump loyalists. Some in the Department of Defense and Congress expressed concerns about those drastic moves in the immediate aftermath of Trump's electoral defeat, with one lawmaker writing in a statement that post-election, quote, chaos has now reached the Pentagon, unquote. David Lappin, L-A-P-A-N, a former Department of Defense spokesman with decades of military service, told Business Insider that the moves do not make sense and that part of the, quote, cause for alarm is not knowing why this is being done, unquote. Top Pentagon leadership positions are being packed with Trump loyalists for reasons that are unclear and triggering mounting concern. President Donald Trump fired Secretary of Defense Mark Esper on Monday, and the very next day, Chief of Staff to the Secretary of Defense Jim Stewart, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy James Anderson, and Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security Joseph Kernan, K-E-R-N-A-N, resigned. Chris Miller, formerly the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, replaced Esper. Anthony Papa, P-A-P-A, a former Fox News commentator who the Trump administration sidestepped Congress to slip into the Pentagon, replaced Anderson. And Kash Patel, K-A-S-H-P-A-T-E-L, and Ezra Cohn Watnick, both former members of the National Security Council considered loyal to the president, replaced Stewart and Kernan. And there is speculation that more defense officials may be on their way out, and that this is just the beginning. Even with only 70 days until the Biden administration takes over. Trump, however, has refused to acknowledge his defeat for 5 days and instead baselessly claimed election fraud. The flurry of departures apparently sent shockwaves through the Department of Defense. A defense official told CNN that the situation was, quote, unsettling, unquote, adding that, quote, these are dictator moves, unquote. The Associated Press wrote that, quote, unease was palpable inside the Pentagon Tuesday, unquote. Representative Adam Smith, a Washington Democrat and chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, sounded the alarm Tuesday afternoon, accusing Trump of sowing chaos and division after losing the election. Quote, that chaos has now reached the Pentagon, he wrote. Quote, I've been shot at a lot. I've been nearly killed a bunch of times. I'm not an alarmist. I try to stay cool under pressure. Mark me down as alarmed, unquote. Retired four-star General Barry McCaffrey said on MSNBC Wednesday. One more time. Quote, I've been shot at a lot. I've been nearly killed a bunch of times. I'm not an alarmist. I try to stay cool under pressure. Mark me down as alarmed, unquote. Retired four-star General Barry McCaffrey said on MSNBC Wednesday. Quote, we are watching the setup of people who are unqualified for office to be in control of the 2.1 million men and women of the armed forces, he added. David Lappin, a former Pentagon spokesman with decades of military service, told Business Insider that part of the, quote, cause for alarm is not knowing why this is being done, unquote. Again, quoting, you have an administration with very little credibility, little to none. The level of trust is very low, so people are naturally going to think the worst, he added. Again quoting, and the administration isn't taking steps to reassure anyone about why they are taking these actions, unquote. I think what has everybody most concerned is that it doesn't make sense, unquote, Lappin said. Actually, in retrospect, this was before January 6th. This was published on November 11th of 2020. It actually does make a lot of sense. Continuing. If it were vindictive, a response to Trump's souring on Esper as the defense secretary, then he could simply have fired Esper and elevated Deputy Secretary of Defense David Norquist. But that didn't happen. Instead, someone was brought in from outside, and then the departures accelerated. Quote, there is no rational explanation for it, he said. Again quoting, there are any number of bad scenarios that could play out. We don't know which of those might be true, if any, but in the absence of any better explanation, people are concerned, unquote. Lappin noted that people coming in largely appeared to be unqualified. Lappin noted that the people coming in largely appeared to be unqualified or underqualified for the positions they are taking over, potentially crippling the military's leadership. Some worried these acting officials do not have the leverage to block or would even enable the orders of a president who increasingly shows little regard for democratic processes. Their lack of experience with their new Pentagon roles also potentially hinders the transition process, because when President-elect Joe Biden's team is finally able to get that process moving, they will be forced to rely on people who have only been on the job a matter of weeks. Again, note Lappin's statement, jumping back a paragraph. Some worry these acting officials do not have the leverage to block or would even enable the orders of a president who increasingly shows little regard for democratic processes, skipping down. Trump continues to contest the election and repeatedly claims Biden's win is fraudulent without evidence. Quote, again, you have an administration that operates with a deficit of trust, so in this environment, people are going to question their motives, unquote, Lappin said. People are going to worry about what could happen, unquote. The problem is that the upheavals at the Pentagon create uncertainty for the Department of Defense as a whole, for both the military and civilian employees, he explained. Furthermore, it confuses America's allies. Note that our after article is going to be some of the reaction from the allies. Furthermore, it confuses America's allies and potentially gives an opening to U.S. adversaries. Quote, all of those things are essentially damaging not only to the Department of Defense, but to our country, Lappin said. That is why people are worked up about it. There's just a lot of potential danger there. Yes, indeed. And that was a before, as one person noted, these are dictator moves. However, the Brigada Hofstadter on the editorial pages and op-ed pages will assure us that everything is okay, and that those who are worried about fascism coming to America are just paranoid, actually. I'm not worried about it coming from America. That happened a long time ago. Now, another article, also from Business Insider. However, this from the next day. This is from Business Insider of January 7th of 2021. It is by Mitch Prothero, P-R-O-T-H-E-R-O. Some among America's military allies believe Trump deliberately attempted a coup and may have had help from federal law enforcement officials, unquote. I would note that in today's Western edition of the New York Times, the commander of the Washington National Guard states basically that his ability to respond had been curtailed. And in terms of responses he had to how come it was so difficult to get the National Guard to the Capitol riot. Note again that article that was in Yahoo News, that was from Business Insider of November 11th of 2020. Now, from January 7th of 2021, again, also from Business Insider by Mitch Prothero, some among America's military allies believe Trump deliberately attempted a coup and may have had help from federal law enforcement officials, unquote. Key points. Multiple European security officials told Insider, Business Insider that President Donald Trump appeared to have tacit support among U.S. federal agencies responsible for securing the Capitol complex in Wednesday's coup attempt. One more time. Multiple European security officials told Business Insider that President Donald Trump appeared to have tacit support among U.S. federal agencies responsible for securing the Capitol complex in Wednesday's coup attempt. Business Insider is reporting this information because it illustrates the serious repercussions of Wednesday's events. Even if they are mistaken, some among America's international military allies are now willing to give credence to the idea that Trump deliberately tried to violently overturn an election and had help from some federal law enforcement agents. Quote, we train alongside the U.S. federal law enforcement to handle these very matters, and it is obvious that large parts of any successful plan were just ignored, unquote, one source told us. The supporters of President Donald Trump, who stormed the Capitol on Wednesday to stop the ratification of President-elect Joe Biden's election victory, were attempting a violent coup that multiple European security officials said appeared to have at least tacit support from aspects of the U.S. federal agencies responsible for securing the Capitol complex. Business Insider spoke with three officials on Thursday morning. A French police official responsible for public security in a key section of central Paris, and two intelligence officials from NATO countries who directly work in counterterrorism and counterintelligence operations involving the U.S., terrorism, and Russia. They said the circumstantial evidence available pointed to what would be openly called a coup attempt in any other nation. None were willing to speak on the record because of the dire nature of the subject. One more time. They said the circumstantial evidence available pointed to what would be openly called a coup attempt in any other nation. None were willing to speak on the record because of the dire nature of the subject. While they did not furnish evidence that federal agency officials facilitated the chaos, Business Insider is reporting this information because it illustrates the scale and the seriousness of Wednesday's events. America's international military and security allies are now willing to give serious credence to the idea that Trump deliberately tried to violently overturn an election and that some federal law enforcement agents, by omission or otherwise, facilitated the attempt. Quote, "Today, I am briefing my government that we believe with a reasonable level of certainty that Donald Trump attempted a coup," unquote. One NATO source set the stage using terms more commonly used to describe unrest in developing countries. Quote, "The defeated president gives a speech to a group of supporters where he tells them he was robbed of the election, denounces his own administration's members and party as traitors, and tells his supporters to storm the building where the vote is being held," unquote, the NATO intelligence official said. The supporters, many dressed in military attire and waving revolutionary-style flags, then stormed the building where the federal law enforcement agencies controlled by the current president do not establish a security cordon, and the protesters quickly overwhelmed the last line of police, unquote. Again quoting, "The president then makes a public statement to the supporters attacking the Capitol that he loves them but doesn't really tell them to stop," unquote, the official said. Again quoting, "Today, I am briefing my government that we believe with a reasonable level of certainty that Donald Trump attempted a coup that failed when the system did not buckle. I can't believe this happened," unquote. A law enforcement official who trains with U.S. forces believes someone interfered with the proper deployment of officers around Congress. The French police official said they believed that an investigation would find that someone interfered with the deployment of additional federal law enforcement officials on the perimeter of the Capitol complex. The official has direct knowledge of the proper procedures for security of the facility. The security of Congress is entrusted to the U.S. Capitol Police, a federal agency that answers to Congress. It is routine for the Capitol Police to coordinate with the Federal Secret Service and the Park Police and local police in Washington, D.C. before large demonstrations. The National Guard, commanded by the Department of Defense, is often on standby as well. On Wednesday, however, that coordination was late or absent altogether. It is obvious that large parts of any successful plan were just ignored, unquote. Quote, again, quoting, "You cannot tell me that I don't know what they should have done. I can fly to Washington tomorrow and do that job just as any police official in Washington can fly to Paris and do mine," unquote, the official said. The official directs public security in a central Paris police district filled with government buildings and tourist sites. Quote, "These are not subtle principles," unquote, for managing demonstrations, again quoting, "and they transfer to every situation," the official said. "This is why we train alongside the U.S. federal law enforcement to handle these very matters, and it is obvious that large parts of any successful plan were just ignored," unquote. The National Guard, which was deployed heavily to quell the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020, did not show up to assist the police until 2 hours after the action started on Wednesday, according to the Associated Press. One video appeared to show some police officers opening a barrier to allow a group of protesters to get closer to the Capitol Dome. Another video showed a police officer allowing a rioter to take a selfie with him inside the Capitol while protesters milled around the building unchecked. Kim Dine, D-I-N-E, who was the chief of the Capitol Police from 2012 to 2016, told the Washington Post that he was surprised that the Capitol Police allowed demonstrators on the steps of the Capitol. He said he was also mystified that few rioters were arrested on the spot. Larry Schaefer, who worked for the Capitol Police for more than 30 years, told ProPublica something similar. Quote, "We have a planned, known demonstration that has a propensity for violence in the past and threats to carry weapons. Why would you not prepare yourself as we have done in the past?" Unquote. The French police official detailed multiple lapses that they believe were systematic. And this in a section called Systematic Failures. One, large crowds of protesters needed to be managed far earlier by the police, who instead controlled a scene at the first demonstration Trump addressed and then ignored the crowd as it streamed toward the Capitol. Quote, "It should have been surrounded, managed, and directed immediately, and that pressure never released," unquote. Because the crowd was not managed and directed, the official said, the protesters were able to congregate unimpeded around the Capitol where the next major failure took place. Quote, "It is unthinkable there was not a strong police cordon on the outskirts of the complex. Fences and barricades are useless without strong police enforcement. This is when you start making arrests, targeting key people that appear violent, anyone who attacks an officer, anyone who breaches the barricade. You have to show that crossing the line will fail and end in arrest," unquote. Again quoting, "I cannot believe the failure to establish a proper cordon was a mistake," one more time. Quote, "I cannot believe that the failure to establish a proper cordon was a mistake. These are very skilled police officials, but they are federal, and that means they ultimately report to the president." One more time. "These are very skilled police officials, but they are federal, and that means they ultimately report to the president. This needs to be investigated," unquote. Again, quoting, "When the crowd reached the steps of the building, the situation was over. The police are there to protect the building from terrorist attacks and crime, not a battalion of infantry. That had to be managed from hundreds of meters away unless the police were willing to completely open fire, and I can respect why they were not," unquote. The third official, who works in counterintelligence for a NATO member, agreed that the situation could only be seen as a coup attempt, no matter how poorly considered and likely to fail, and said its implications might be too huge to immediately fathom. Well, yes, indeed, and that from NATO security officials. Of course, veteran listeners to this program and the people, frankly, who have honestly studied American history and the realities of same, know that we have had coups d'etat in the past, one of them being on November 22nd, 1963. We have had others since that time in For the Record programs 8, 96, 7, 8, and 9. We visited with the heroic Farah Mansour, who has chronicled at great length not only what has come to be known as the October Surprise, the sabotaging of the attempt at rescuing the hostages from the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, but has chronicled how the very setting up of the Islamic regime in Iran was part of a CIA operation that not only set up a fundamentalist Islamic regime on the flank of the former Soviet Union, but it wound up discrediting and hoping to deep six the presidency of Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter had failed to appoint George W. Bush to reappoint George W. Bush to lead the CIA. We've had other coups d'etat in the past. For many years, I have been not only citing the Serpent's Walk scenario in which descendants of the SS, the members of the Underground Reich, infiltrate the military and take over the U.S., but also I have discussed in the programs and posts called Specialized Knowledge and Abilities, how Nazis and fascists and white supremacists have been infiltrating the military and the police, not only to acquire those specialized knowledge and abilities, but also to compromise those organizations. In that regard, very quickly from Army Times of January 11th of 2021 by Kyle Renfer, R-E-N-P-F-E-R, Army PSYOP officer resigned commission prior to leading group to D.C. protests, unquote. An Army psychological operations officer who led a group during the January 6th rally in Washington, D.C. that culminated in a deadly mob breaching the U.S. Capitol had resigned her commission several months prior to the event, according to a defense official familiar with the situation. Captain Emily Ramey, R-A-I-M-E-Y-3-B, was still on active duty during last week's protests. However, she had already been handed down an adverse administrative action for a separate incident and resigned her commission, the official told Army Times. Ramey's involvement in the rally is currently under investigation by First Special Forces Command, which oversees her PSYOP unit. Captain Ramey did or did not do, when you have people with this extreme level of training, people involved with the special forces and PSYOPs, the capability for them to engage in malfeasance is really, if not limitless, it certainly is enormous. And listening not only to the Begaba Hofstadter, but listening to people like Nancy Pelosi expounding on the Capitol riot and referring to the Capitol as the temple of democracy makes me want to puke. I think a more appropriate term would be the people's temple, as in Jim Jones, something that we looked at in AFA program number 7 and in a For the Record show dealing with mind control. The evidence is very strong that the People's Temple was a CIA operation, and examine the information that we presented in those. Note that almost all of the people who committed, quote, committed suicide, unquote, just happened to be lying face down, making the identification of their bodies in that hot tropical climate very difficult, if not impossible. Another thing that made me want to puke in connection with the Capitol riot, George W. Bush talked about how he would be attending the inauguration and the quote, witnessing the peaceful transfer of power is a hallmark of our democracy that never gets old, he added. This from the guy who basically benefited from what is known as the Brooks Brothers riot, which shut down the counting of the ballots in Dade County. That riot, basically like the Capitol riot, was led by Roger Stone, who is also in consideration as possibly having played a role in the Capitol riot as well. And listening to W talking about the peaceful transfer of power, in For the Record program 456, we took a look at the Nazi and fascist connections to the September 11th attacks. There's been a lot of discussion of the Turner Diaries in connection with not only the Capitol riot, but domestic terrorism in general. From Counterpunch, there was an article in 1998, actually an article in the wake of the attacks, and in 1998, William Luther Pierce, who authored the Turner Diaries, has the following. This again from Counterpunch, and the annotation is in AFA, in For the Record Program 456. In one chilling commentary, again, this is 1998, 3 years before the attacks, in one chilling commentary, Pierce, after noting that bin Laden and the rest of the lost generation of angry Muslim youth had it with their parents' compromises and were hell-bent on revenge against infidel America, issued this stark prophetic warning in a 1998 radio address titled, "Stay Out of Tall Buildings," unquote. New Yorkers who work in tall office buildings anything close to the size of the World Trade Center might consider wearing hard hats, Pierce warned. The running theme in Pierce's commentaries is, to paraphrase his hero Hitler, that Osama bin Laden's warning to America is, "I am coming, and so is bioterrorism." This obviously in 1998, directly foreshadowing the September 11th attacks and the anthrax attacks as well. By the way, the climactic episode in the Turner Diaries is a low-level suicide aerial attack on the Pentagon. It takes place on the German Day of Destiny, which is November 9th. A German will write the date November 9th as 9/11. And for the record, 186, among other programs, we noted that George W. Bush's first business venture, Arbusto Energy, was financed in part by the family of Osama bin Laden, specifically Salem bin Laden, his brother, acting in conjunction with James R. Batt and elements of CIA, helped to finance Arbusto Energy. And we also noted that in an interview with Süddeutsche Rundfunk, Ernest Backes, arguably the foremost European expert on money laundering, said, quote, this again in from For the Record 456, according to financial expert Ernest Backes' information, the 911 money trail leads to Switzerland to the accounts of an organization that was founded by the late lawyer Francois Genoux and evidently still survives. That is the Bank Alpaca. Says Backes, quote, one of the grounds for accusation is that this Swiss attorney had the closest connections with the bin Laden family, that he was an advisor to the bin Laden family, one of its investment bankers. It is known for certain that he supported terrorism and was the estate executive for Hitler and part of the terror milieu. Francois Genoux, again a financial advisor to the bin Laden family that helped to finance Arbusto Energy and an investment banker for the bin Laden family. Francois Genoux was the heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of Martin Bormann, Adolf Hitler, and Joseph Goebbels. So again, W says he never tires of witnessing the peaceful transfer of power. Ugh, make me want to puke. This, however, concludes For the Record program number 1174, Harvest Time, part one, being recorded on March 4th of 2021. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.